my vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. Vegetables cart off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Oh,
table vegetable. I tried to kick the ball, but my tenny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so
I know that you feel better when you send us in your letter and tell us the name of your favorite vegetable. I know that you feel better when you send us in.
Welcome to Your Homegrown Food. I'm your host, Wander Fox, and you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. For the next half hour, I will be talking about food. This show is all about the alternative food movement, which includes people and organizations working to make our food system healthier for our environment, more socially just, and better for eaters' health. So welcome to the show. And this week is the first time I'm in the radio station without the host of the Arduck Show, so you'll have to bear with me if there are any technical snafus or pauses, as I often seem to do. So this week I have a ton of information that I'd like to talk about. So I'm going to jump right in. Hopefully we can get to all of it in the next half hour. This week I'm going to talk about a couple of things the government is doing that I found interesting, and then I'll play a clip about buying organic food that I thought you all might like to hear. I also have some things to say about home vegetable gardening this week, and I'll end with some cooking info. So first, I'm going to talk about an article I found on ediblegeography.com. And so, let's see. As part of Michelle Obama's anti-childhood obesity campaign, Let's Move, the United States Department of Agriculture launched an exciting new tool, the Food Environment Atlas. Developed by the USDA's Economic Research Service in partnership with the Center for Disease Control and the National Cancer Institute, the National Farm to School Network, and the University of Illinois at Chicago. The Atlas allows anyone with an internet connection to create custom maps of their food environment. What's more, it even makes the data set embedded in the Atlas available for download. The Atlas currently maps 90 food environment indicators divided into three broad categories. Food choices includes both measurements of food access and consumption from the number of supermarkets per 1,000 people to restaurant expenditures per capita. Health and well-being tracks dietary outcomes such as hunger, diabetes, and obesity. Community characteristics add an extra level of demographic data, including income levels and metro, non-metro status. The idea then is that the researchers, policymakers, and individuals can compare counties across America, comparing and analyzing the correlation between food choices, health outcomes, and population characteristics. So what do you see when you look at America using food as the metric? So I pulled up the website, which is USDA.gov. And some of the statistics that I looked at that I found interesting were fast food spending per person, and they have on their website a map of the United States, and it shows by state what the statistics are. So fast food expenditures per capita, let's see, for California, my goodness, fast food spending per person is highest in California of all the states, not only California, also Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and some other, Massachusetts, if you can believe that. And some of the lowest states include New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Vermont, Wisconsin, Iowa, Idaho, Arizona was the lowest. That's amazing. And then, let's see, we have gallons of soft drink per person. California is somewhere in the middle. The highest states are Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi. Some of the lowest ones are the Midwest states, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah. Wow. And the New England states, Maine, New Hampshire, they're really low on soft drinks per person. Then pounds of meat or poultry eaten per person. California's up there. We eat a lot of meat, apparently. And some of the other states that are pretty high on the list, Texas, Pennsylvania, and then some of the lowest states, New England, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Arizona, Utah. Wow, I didn't know that California ate so much meat. but we also eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, according to this. Pounds of fruits and vegetables per person, California is very high on the list. One of the weird statistics is Texas. It has a lot of places where people eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, and then most of the state, people are lowest on the list of fruits and vegetables eaten in Texas. Weird. So this is a really fascinating bit of information that the USDA has put out. So it's, again, it's USDA.gov. You can go there and check out these maps. They're pretty interesting to look at. And you can also search by your specific county, which is cool. And there's a lot of other information, as I read in the little article. There's tons of different statistics you can look up. So that's really neat. And another thing I wanted to talk about that the government is doing is also USDA.gov. It's called Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food. So I'm going to play you a clip here from the USDA website.
Hi, I'm Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. I'm standing here at the People's Garden at USDA, and I'm excited to announce the launch of USDA's Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative. We hope this will be the start of a national conversation about the importance of understanding where your food comes from and how it gets to your plate. Here at USDA, Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food means using our existing programs to support the development of local and regional food systems. Because by reconnecting consumers with local producers, we will create new income opportunities for farmers. We can promote sustainable agricultural practices, and we can help generate wealth that will stay in rural communities. We can also provide your families, children, with a healthier food supply, and we can decrease the amount of energy we use to ship food all over the world. Today, perhaps more than any other time since most Americans moved off the farm, food and agriculture are at the center of a national conversation. We think that Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food will add to that dialogue so that more Americans understand how they can support local food economies in their communities. But this is just the beginning. We'll continue to reach out to the American people for their input and thoughts, and you can help. Start the conversation today by commenting on this YouTube video. Let us know. Do you know your farmer? Do you know where your food comes from each and every day? You support local agriculture. Do you have ideas about how to get more folks to eat locally grown fruits and vegetables? I hope to hear from you on these and other issues. I hope that you'll support USDA in our efforts to develop local and regional food systems. There's never been a better time to know your farmer and know your food. Have a great day.
Yeah, so if you'd like to see more, get more information about that, the website is usda.gov. And next, I'd like to play a clip about buying organic food. Hopefully this will be useful information for you all.
Your operation.
We work a total of 400 acres. My husband does all the farming and I do all the...
Oops, technical difficulty here. There we go.
Great, and this sustains your family?
It is our own.
Since the recession hit, you may have changed the way you do your grocery shopping, especially if you buy more expensive organics. More than half of consumers have switched to cheaper ones or stopped buying them altogether. But shopping for organics doesn't have to bust your budget. Joining us now with more is Kelly Grant, Senior Consumer Reporter for SmartMoney.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
We'd all love to have everything organic, but it doesn't always fit the bill when it comes to the budget. So one bit of advice you give is to prioritize your organics. What can you do?
You definitely can pick and choose which items you go organic on to save some money. Some produce just requires less pesticide to grow. Others really retains less after you've washed it. So go with some of the guidelines by the Environmental Working Group. You can find those online. Some of the items they say are really essential to buy organic would include strawberries and apples. Some of the things on the lower end of the scale where, you know, you might be able to skip it would be things like broccoli and asparagus.
What about a co-op? Because I understand that can save you some money if you join one.
Yep, that is definitely a money saver. And for there, you're going to pay usually about a small annual fee, and then you get access to a lot of produce that's provided by local farms and other producers, and a lot of that is going to be organic. You'll see savings usually of about 15 to 30%. Just keep in mind that some co-ops do require a hefty buy-in fee, or they'll want you to work there regularly, so it might not work for everyone.
You've got that free Sunday or not.
Exactly.
A lot of people clip coupons in regular life for other items. Does that apply to organic? Is that something you're going to see in the Sunday circular?
Well, you're not going to see usually a lot of organic-specific coupons in the circular, but what you want to keep your eye out for are some of the coupons that say any for a particular brand or line of products. So that'll be something like Quaker oatmeal. If it says any, they do that does include their organic line. And then if you want organic-specific brands, then you can go online. A lot of them, like Horizon Organics and Stonyfield, will have coupons on their websites that you can print out and bring into the store.
Does the organic selection, as far as in season and out of season, is that the same as regular vegetables, and does that save you money to buy in season?
You'll definitely save money buying in season. The gap between standard produce and organic produce is usually a little bit smaller in terms of price, mostly because the items can be grown in larger quantities and locally, and they don't need to be flown in from across the country.
Oh, and lastly, consider generics. There are generic drugs, but I didn't realize there are generic organics as well.
There are. A lot of store brands, they're really trying to push those. So you'll find that places like Whole Foods have a store brand organic. Safeway has one. Meijer has one. And those will be, certainly they're going to be a little more expensive than, you know, the conventional one of the brand name, but it's going to be less expensive than buying an organic brand name.
You can save some cash. All right. Kelly Grant, Senior Consumer Reporter for SmartMoney.com. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, that was a clip from CBS News. Hopefully you found that information useful. And now I'm going to talk about gardening. Woohoo! So, this week I'm going to talk about tomatoes because, according to our local tomato expert, Love Apple Farm, Saturday is the time to plant your tomatoes from seed. So you want to get those started in a nice warm place, like indoors. Plant your tomato seeds, and then in a few months, well, let's see, a few weeks, maybe a month, you're going to want to plant those out in your garden. and I wanted to read to you from a new book that just came out this month, Sunset Western Garden Book of Edibles. It's a great book. It's got all things, all plants edible in it, A to Z. And they have a nice little section on tomatoes, so I was going to just read you a little bit in honor of planting season for tomatoes. Easy and prolific, tomatoes are just about the most widely grown of all garden plants, edible or otherwise. Amateur and commercial growers have different ideas about how best to raise these Andean natives. If you've developed a successful method, continue to follow it. But if you're a novice or have been dissatisfied with previous attempts, you may find the following information useful. Choose varieties suited to your climate that will yield the kind of tomatoes you like on plants you can handle. Some varieties are determinant, others indeterminate. Determinate types are bushier, need little or no staking or trellising, and tend to bear all their crop at once. Indeterminate ones are more vine-like, need more training, and generally bear over a longer period. Though the tomato plant is really a sprawling plant incapable of climbing, you'll often see it referred to as a vine. Plant a few each of early, mid-season, and late varieties for longest possible production, or where the growing season is long, plant in spring and again in summer. How to grow it. Best site. Most kinds of tomatoes grow best in sunny, open gardens or raised beds, but small fruited kinds thrive in big pots and hanging baskets. Yield. Typically six plants grown in open ground can supply a family of four with enough fruit to enjoy fresh and to use for canning or sauce. Two or three plants in containers will keep you in salad tomatoes for 2 to 3 months. Soil. Tomato plants prefer well-drained neutral or slightly acid soil. Add lime to very acid soil or sulfur to alkaline soil. The autumn before setting out plants. Planting. Set out tomato plants after danger of frost has passed and the soil has warmed. Plant in February or early March in desert zones. Oh, sorry, we're not in desert zone. We're in zone 15 in Santa Cruz, which is in April, May, or early June. When buying tomato plants, look for compact ones with sturdy stems. Avoid those that are tall for the pot or that already have flowers or fruit. To grow tomatoes from seed, sow in pots of light soil mix 5 to 7 weeks before you intend to set out plants. Cover seeds with 1/2 inch of fine soil, firm soil over the seeds, and keep the surface damp. Place the seed container in a cold frame or sunny window at temperatures of 65 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Although a range of 50 degrees Fahrenheit at night to as warm as 85 degrees Fahrenheit in the day will produce acceptable results. When seedlings are 2 inches tall, transplant each into a 3 or 4 inch pot. Keep seedlings in a sunny area until they reach planting size. Make planting holes extra deep, then carefully pinch off the lowest 2 sets of leaves and set in seedlings so that the lowest remaining leaves are just above soil level. Additional roots will form on the buried stems and provide stronger root systems. So, if you don't want to start your tomatoes from seed, you can wait a while and just buy tomato starts from your local garden center. That's a lot easier in some ways than going through the process of tending your seedlings until it's time to plant them out in the garden. If you don't have a lot of time for gardening, then it's probably a good idea just to buy some starts later on in the season and plant them directly in your garden or in your container on your porch. So, but if you do want to start from seed, start the seeds this weekend. Now's the time. And if you want more information about tomatoes, the book I was reading from, again, is Sunset Western Garden Book of Edibles. It's a great book. And also, the Love Apple Farm website has a ton of excellent information for growing tomatoes. And their website, I believe, is growbettervegetables.com. You can also Google Love Apple Farm and you'll find their website. And they have a whole bunch of info that's super useful. I just love their website, and it's broken down really specifically on what to do when you want to grow tomatoes. It's great. And of course, because they grow fantastic tomatoes, if you've ever tried Love Apple Farms tomatoes, you know. So next I'd like to talk about some cooking stuff. So I wanted to talk about Jeremy Fox. He's the chef at a Napa Valley restaurant called Ubuntu. It's on the New York Times list of the 10 best restaurants in America, and it earned a Michelin star, which is apparently almost unheard of for a vegetarian restaurant, which Ubuntu is. I wanted to mention a few easy things he says to do with some stuff that's in season right now. One of the things that is in season right now is fava beans. And let's see, he says to roast fava beans, and you can eat them whole, apparently. So you put the small fava bean pods, when they're 2 to 3 inches long. You don't want to use big ones because they're tough and you can't eat the pods. You put them in a cast iron skillet and roast them in the oven or on the stovetop over high heat until slightly charred. Toss with sea salt, a bit of olive oil, red chili flakes, Meyer lemon juice, and minced garlic, and eat them, pod and all. Wow, that sounds really good. I planted fava beans in my garden, but the fava bean part, the bean part, the pod part, is not on the plant yet. So, oh, but I also read recently that you can eat the fava bean leaves off of the plants. That's a new discovery for me. And a nice thing to know if you're growing fava beans in your garden and the pods haven't grown yet, apparently you can just pick the leaves and eat those, and they taste like fava beans. So that's very cool. Then another thing, this man, what did I say his name was? Jeremy Fox of Ubuntu Restaurant. He says you can make choke chips, which are made out of artichokes. So the way you do that is snap off all the leaves from the baby artichokes and scrape the fuzzy chokes from the centers. Slice very thinly on a mandolin, dropping into lemon water. Dry on towels, then deep fry in 300 degree oil until pale golden and no longer bubbling. Sprinkle on salads or soups made with tomatoes, artichokes, or eggplant. Sounds yummy. Another thing I wanted to tell you about that he recommends doing with something that's in season right now is sorrel vichyssoise. I think that's how you pronounce that, vichyssoise. He says to simmer diced potatoes and leeks in chicken stock until soft, then add sorrel leaves and cook until they're wilted. Puree and strain. Top with finely sliced fresh sorrel. So sorrel's a great thing to grow in your garden because it's a perennial, and it's the French sorrel that I have growing in my garden has sort of a lemony flavor, and it's very tasty. There's other types of sorrel. Let's see. He recommends red sorrel, wood sorrel, and sheep sorrel, and he grows those in his restaurant garden. Sorrel's a really nice thing to eat. Like I said, it's a perennial, so we eat sorrel all year long because we always have it in our garden. And you can cook with it, and you can also put it in salad, eat it fresh. It's tasty. And another thing, another recipe here that's super simple that I would like to tell you about is stuffed mushrooms. He says to fill shiitake caps with goat's milk ricotta, herbs, and sautéed minced mushrooms. Fox likes matsutake. Top with breadcrumbs mixed with olive oil, then shallow fry in 1 inch oil until golden. I love shiitake mushrooms. They're the best. And you can buy them at the farmer's market, which is very cool. And they may even have these other ones, matsutake. I'm not sure what those are. I've never had them, but any kind of different mushrooms tend to be pretty tasty, and you can check out the different mushrooms they have at the farmer's market at that mushroom stand, which is very cool. So yeah, I'm imagining that you can find out more information about Jeremy Fox and Ubuntu Restaurant on the internet if you Google those. And it looks like he's got a ton of great ideas for delicious things to cook, and I'm imagining that his restaurant is très gourmet and delicious and wonderful if you want to go check it out. I've never been there myself. Looks like I have a few more minutes left in the show, so I was going to continue talking about some of the things that Jeremy Fox recommends. And he has a list. Oh, by the way, I found all this information in the latest edition of Sunset Magazine. There's an article about this chef, and so you can pick up that magazine and check out all the things I'm talking about, and you can probably also find more info, like I said, on the internet. So some of the vegetables that he likes at this time of year are baby artichokes. They are from the same plant as big artichokes, but more tender. You peel them and cook them and eat them whole. And miner's lettuce. Find this mild, delicate wild green at farmer's markets from late winter to early spring. And I have found miner's lettuce actually growing in the woods. So if you'd like to go on a little miner's lettuce hunt, it's not hard to find, but you should know what it looks like before you go. I don't want to recommend anyone eating something that's not edible. But it is, once you know what it looks like, it's super easy to find. And it's kind of like sorrel. It's a little lemony and it's neat. Then sheep sorrel is refreshingly tart and fine to use as a main ingredient. Its color turns to olive when cooked. And he also recommends wood sorrel, a deliciously lemony wild green in the oxalis family. Fox uses it only as a garnish since it can be toxic in very large quantities. Didn't know that, but yeah, I've picked a few wood sorrel leaves and chowed on those, and they are nice and also lemony flavored. Baby carrots. Just formed carrots are extremely sweet and crunchy. Use them whole as a garnish. I've grown baby carrots. I tend to just pick regular carrots when they're tiny. I guess that's probably what he does too. And they're nice and tasty. Baby radishes. Dense, juicy, and with very little, if any, heat. Eat them stems and all with butter and salt. Wow, that sounds really good. And kohlrabi, a type of cabbage with a gentle broccoli flavor and creamy texture when cooked. Little ones are the most tender. Neat. So, yeah, those are some things you can look for at the farmer's market, or if you have a garden, you could try growing some of those. How about that? So that's the end of our show today. Thanks for tuning in to Your Homegrown Food here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and freakradio.org on the internet. And I will see you all next week on Wednesday at 11:30 a.m. until Wednesday at 12 p.m. Hope you enjoyed the show, and happy gardening, eating, cooking, and all things food. Bye-bye. Ces poires, tous ces bons fromages, ces épices.